I wanted to give you a standing ovation, but I was already standing and didn't want to go nuts up here. But people ask me about, I'm going to talk about data uncertainty. I don't show any bacteria data, but they ask me how much the uncertainty in bacteria is, and I say higher than what I'm about to show you on the nutrients. But to me, that proceeding with adaptive management is the only wise strategy to, you know, if the uncertainty is high. So so I'm done. Thank you. Any questions on that? But we can attack it. We can intelligently include uncertainty in the discussion, make intelligent regulations, and if we need to go with adaptive management, so be it. It's, you know, we try to make it too hard sometimes, I think. I don't have the shortest title, and I'm not funny, so I'm not going to try to open with a joke or anything. I'm just going to jump in. And some of y'all have seen this, Alan and Gary and Steve, probably. It's not a lot of new information. I've been standing on my soapbox for about 5 or 6 years now, just trying to talk folks like me into calculating uncertainty when they take measurements. So I'm going to talk about the basics on uncertainty in hydrology and water quality, a software tool we developed to help with that, and then present you a few results. Has anybody seen, say, a daily nitrate load, the uncertainty around that, what it might be? Have y'all ever seen data like that? So, you know, maybe that'll be interesting to you, and then talk a little bit about some of the reasons why uncertainty analysis is important. Like I said, Keith Bevins, learned a lot from him reading his work and talking to him a few times. It's pretty hard to argue with those first two statements. Right? I mean, I never had anybody argue with me on those statements. The problem is, even though such passionate calls and straightforward calls are made for uncertainty analysis, we typically ignore it. I asked the question earlier in our discussion on how many people, every time they publish data, publish an uncertainty estimate for that data. We all kind of shrugged and wish we did and know we should, but we probably don't do it most of the time, I would say. So if it's water quality data, which is more of my expertise, or soils data, maybe y'all are more into that, why don't we include that uncertainty? One, until recently, I just don't think we made the effort to understand the different measurement components and how they impacted the resulting data. Again, until recently, there was no complete air propagation or uncertainty analysis done on water quality data. USGS does do quite a bit of studies and publish uncertainty estimates on flow, but rarely on water quality. And then there was no easy-to-use tool. We're all busy enough. We don't need another complicated thing on our plate to do. And then I think the last reason, and you know, I'm a fairly simple guy. I'm not a statistician, and so it scared me to enter in this topic because, you know, I thought it was going to be too complicated and things. But you look into it deeper, and I don't think it's really too complex. If I can handle it, we all can handle it. So in 2006, we published an uncertainty estimation framework, just done on Excel spreadsheets, that focused on small watershed data, and specifically flow, sediment, nitrogen, phosphorus data. And what that framework did was establish four procedural categories, which basically the data collection steps are in each one of those procedural categories. And then that framework also published the uncertainty estimates that had been published for each one of those steps. And what we did to get an idea of sort of the range of uncertainties we were dealing with was create some arbitrary sort of data quality scenarios. You know, worst case would be poor monitoring conditions, very low funding, you know, on the opposite spectrum. You know, expert analysis, ideal site, and sort of ultimate funding. I put that graph on there small because I don't want y'all to get too worked up about those numbers, but I'm going to show you some numbers in a minute you can actually see. That framework was a predecessor for this DUET, the Data Uncertainty Estimation Tool. I use this abbreviation a lot in my work. It's hydrology and water quality. This means flow, basically, or nutrient, sediment, constituent measurements. So all we did with the framework was add in a data processing and management procedural category, which involves a way to input user error or lost samples, things like that. The other categories were more for the actual steps in data collection. And this is just a pretty picture of the opening window of the interface there. So what DUET does and the uncertainty framework was use the root mean square error propagation method. You can probably imagine the debates and discussion I had in trying to get this published on which equation I should use. I had people say that was the perfect equation. In the opposite extreme, I had people wanting me to run Monte Carlo simulations to develop parameters for distributions to input to something to calculate uncertainty. So there was, like I said, quite a bit of debate. I'm, again, more of a simple. We haven't done uncertainty calculation that start out simple so people will do it. I'm not saying it's the equation that needs to be used for the next 100 years, but it's a simple accepted method, and why not use it? So for instance, on flow measurement, the tool gives all the different steps involved in taking a flow measurement and then gives published uncertainty information for those steps where it's available. And then that was for flow, for sample collection, for sample preservation, for laboratory analysis, and for data processing and management. The tool walks you through those and then helps you calculate an uncertainty and a resulting value that you produce with that. You're grinning at me. You're making me nervous. Is that? You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. At least you're not frowning at me. Sometimes when I talk on this, people are frowning at me, so the grinning's a lot better than that. So the resulting estimate is the uncertainty of that individual measured discharge concentration or load point. You can use that same calculation for all your points, or you can do it point by point. So to test that, to apply it, we picked 5 different monitoring projects from all over the country. The watershed data we chose were from drained watersheds, from arid watersheds, different land uses, different sizes. And then we looked at the uncertainty in flow, sediment transport, nitrate, orthophosphorus, and total nitrogen and phosphorus for 131 storm events. So here's the big data slide. I can leave it up. For all, is everybody familiar with box and whiskers plots? Or if there's somebody that has a friend that's not knowledgeable about it, it'd be good to. The dotted line are the means of those distributions. So for instance, on flow, which is Q, I'm not used to not having a pointer. Flow right here, that dotted line shows that the average uncertainty in all those 100 storm events was about, 13%. The median's more like 14 or 15%. The dots are 95th percentiles. So, and this dot means 95% of the uncertainties for sediment were below plus or minus 30%. What do you think about those values? Would you be surprised that on, say, peat, on, you know a little bit about phosphorus, values between plus or minus 10 or plus or minus 30%? Does that, what you would have thought, is it surprisingly high, low? What do you think?
This is the measurement of
Yeah, so this is a storm load, so a storm mass transport of ortho-P in those 131 storm events. That's the range of uncertainties we calculated. When I went into this, I really didn't have any idea how the numbers were going to turn out. Flow is obviously the least uncertain because you have so much fewer steps. You don't have to collect a sediment sample. The sediment's a little higher because it's you do have to go in and actually try to subsample a stream cross section to get the sediment concentrations. And then the nutrients are a little higher, yet you've got the possibility of post-collection transformations, more complicated analytical techniques. But I don't know if there's any modelers in the room, or I know with Roberta with policy, if on a specific study you don't know the uncertainty, but if it's total nitrogen, you're fairly confident it's between 15 and 35%. I think there's some value in knowing that when you see these type of data, even though you don't have maybe specific data for your watersheds. Any more questions about the? This again is only the uncertainty in the measured data that I'm presenting here. And I present it as this number is really best termed a cumulative probable uncertainty. So it's, again, you're, you know, you're squaring up and then dividing by the square root. So it's not a maximum uncertainty. It's more of a, well, again, term probable error or cumulative probable uncertainty. So it's a, you know, some people think they're not high enough, and they think if 10% error for data collection plus 10% error for lab equals 20%, it's not the case, because you have a possibility of under and over estimation that canceled out, that cancels out at some degree. Again, we jumped into this. You know, Doug worked with me. I mean, there's a lot of people that's worked in this for the past 6 or 7 years, and our underlying goal through all this was for this work to be very practical, for it to be simple and easy to use. It was never to be the be-all, end-all, most complex numerical, mathematical estimation of measurement uncertainty. It was supposed to be a first-generation step to open up the conversation, to give people an option if they wanted to calculate uncertainty and really try to talk to them about the benefits of doing such. So what about, I do a lot of monitoring, that's really more of my expertise, and why in the world would having uncertainty estimates or being able to consider uncertainty help me with my monitoring? What do y'all think about that? I mean, I think somebody brought it up earlier, if you know, I think it was your Denmark example, if you know one step is what inputs a lot of the uncertainty into the resulting value, you can focus your QA, your money, and your effort on reducing the uncertainty of that step. So to me, as a monitoring person, that's very valuable. Decision-making, Roberta brought it up again. Don't you proceed differently if you know data you're looking at is plus or minus 5% or plus or minus 50%? To me, you can establish a hard, cold, draw a line regulation if the data you're using are very certain. If it's very uncertain, I think it's much wiser to you know, move forward with an adaptive management type approach, and as we learn more, hopefully reduce that uncertainty or move forward with regulation that's a little has a little more wiggle room, I guess you could say, in it. Scientific integrity. Again, I'm more guilty than the rest of y'all since it's sort of my subject area, but we all were taught that measurements are uncertain, but we still most of the time refuse to put those uncertainty estimates in our publications, and I would argue there's, you know, that's not really good scientific ethics involved. And then model calibration and evaluation. The modelers up and down my hallway, Alan, you know the folks up and down the hallway, they see a measured data point and they try to make their model reproduce that exact value. But we just said that value is not right. It's got uncertainty. It's somewhere in between an uncertainty range. So I've been really trying to push to the modeling community to have a goal of producing estimates that are within an uncertainty range of a measured value instead of that individual measured value. And with that, would love to answer any questions if there's time. We've got a lot of publications on the subject. I'd like to get to you if you want them on the model evaluation, on the data collection. And there's the website and the email. Please let me know if you. Yes?
Aaron, just, I'm
Chris
Snyder with the International Hydration.
Okay.
And the uncertainty you showed there for those major parameters were low parameters.
Correct.
And for much of our USGS data in this country, this run through the Sparrow model, flow is a continuously measured variable. Whereas with nutrient concentration, often it's a once a month sample.
Correct.
And when I look at your TN and TP uncertainties there, much broader ranges in the whisker plots that you had with nitrate and phosphate. How much is that related to the analytical measure of those nutrient values as opposed to a flow-induced expansion of that uncertainty?
Yeah. Most of those differences, well, it's both, because if it's just a concentration, you know, flow doesn't factor in at all. The difficulty of collecting a good, say, particulate nitrogen sample in a stream is much larger than a good dissolved, say, a nitrate sample, because it's well mixed. So I think that's the single biggest factor in the bands being wider on the particulates. So, but you brought up a great example. If you're taking daily flow measurements or hourly flow measurements, multiplying it by a once-a-month concentration, you've introduced a huge amount of uncertainty. I mean, I'm showing plus or minus 30% if I measure every value of flow and every value of the concentration. And so that's another huge step that wouldn't, that's not considered here. Yes. What I've done through all this work is take a single measured data point, which is a load of nitrogen in a storm and a measured flow during that storm, and that's my value that produced my load. So I'm not, none of this addresses really, you know, changing whether it's 90th or 50%. So this is the uncertainty around that individual measured value, period. And that is hard, and I do have trouble explaining that in the publications, that it's single or individual measured data points in the uncertainty. So. With the modeling work, when we talk about uncertainty distributions, they think about the distribution of the population of predicted values, but I'm not even talking about populations there. I'm talking about the uncertainty around single measured and single predicted values.
We need to...
Okay, sorry, thank you.